Today on the People's News, the grand jury fails in Louisville in the case of Breonna Taylor, and we talk about voter suppression and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. A new documentary that'll come out next week follows the migrant caravan. This weekend is Houston's International LGBTQ Film Festival, but this time it's online. Anna Walker with Adaptive Sports, and more. I'm Steve Gallington with the People's News, and the People's News starts now. Under the topic of news that we need to update, a Harris County District Court rejected the Texas Attorney General's injunction request, therefore allowing Harris County to send mail-in ballot applications to all registered voters, along with a pamphlet explaining who is eligible to vote by mail. A Harris County grand jury indicted Baytown police officer Juan De La Cruz for the death of 44-year-old Pamela Turner. The charge is aggravated assault by a public servant, a first-degree felony that carries a punishment of 5 years to life in prison. Pam Turner's killing was a tragedy. It is important to acknowledge that her family and the community are in pain, Harris County District Attorney Kim Ogg said. Protests again hit the streets of Louisville, Kentucky, following the grand jury decision not to charge any of the police officers with murder, and only one indictment of the three officers involved. The one officer was charged not with shooting the black medical worker Breonna Taylor in a botched drug raid, but wanton endangerment for firing his gun. The botched drug raid came about when police charged into the wrong apartment and shot two people inside in a no-knock warrant. Officers said they announced they were entering the premises, but other residents said otherwise. The officers involved did not have their body cams on and have been found to have lied about the incident on numerous occasions. But yet, that was not enough to charge any of the officers. The result was more violent protests, and now two police officers have been shot. We talked to two people about this. First, we talked to lawyer and legal analyst Richard Bell, who calls for legal reform and changes, but also reminds everybody about voting and how votes are being stolen.
All right. First of all, I think it's an extremely sad day again. And each time something tragic like this happens in the justice system, we say, well, maybe it'll be better next time. I think most of all, besides the obvious that they didn't indict the police that caused her death, which just doesn't seem to pass the smell test. Forget about being a lawyer, just as a layperson, doesn't seem to pass the smell test. But I think the fact that the Attorney General has essentially not giving information to the public, like let's see the ballistics reports. Let's see some of the things that this decision was based on. Before we can criticize anyone, how about they just let it out to the general public and let us see for ourselves? I think what the worst part is when government institutions hide information from citizens, because then it allows us all to believe what we want to believe. And we're all going to the worst place, rightly so, because of where we've been in the late times.
How does that compare to New York? In New York, we had several cases of police corruption.
Yeah, Amado Diallo. I would say the one that sticks in my craw is Eric Garner, the I Don't Breathe case, because I actually had a case. I do civil rights work, and I actually had a case before that of someone that yelled, "I can't breathe." Fortunately, he didn't die, but he did have a police officer, sheriff's department doing this to him. And in that case, in the Eric Garner case, I mean, it was so outrageous because we all saw it on video, we heard the audio, and the grand jury did not indict in Staten Island here in New York, and that seemed to be an incredible miscarriage of justice.
Is it because they moved it to Staten Island?
Well, they didn't move it. It happened in Staten Island, so that was the proper venue for it. Staten Island of the five boroughs is by far the most conservative and the least diverse. And it was very hard to conceive of how anyone could come out of that grand jury and not say that what happened to that man was a crime of some level.
It seems like this has been the plan all along, just not to indict.
Yeah, I think what bothers me as a civil rights attorney and what bothers the public is that it is so in our face. I mean, we get whatever facts are brought out to us as the public, or we see the videos, which we didn't have, of course, the Breonna Taylor case, and we all say to ourselves, what do you have to do to indict a policeman who is not acting according to law? And I think that's the frustration, and the fact that it happens over and over and over again. You can understand why people get very angry and why people protest and they march. The frustration does boil over, and you can understand that.
How much power does the DA have? The DA have, or the AG have?
Oh, yeah, but great question.
What's in and what's not?
Great question. Yeah, the great question. So the old expression in the law is you can indict a ham sandwich. What that means is the DA just presents their part of the case. This isn't like a trial where you hear both sides. So the DA presents what evidence they want to present. So it's quite slanted as to what they want. So if you're really pushing for an indictment, in most, almost all cases, you can get it if that's what you're looking for. And if you're not looking for it, then you can do it the other way as well. But it's a secret proceeding, so we don't know what went on in almost all of these. That's one of the problems. But you know what interesting topic you just brought up about the power of the DA? So I just wrote a book called Voting: The Ultimate Act of Resistance, and it's about my experiences fighting voter suppression for the last two decades on the ground and in the courtroom. And so I'm a big advocate on voting rights, obviously, because I have seen how it is suppressed on the ground and in the courtroom. And voting, people don't look at it like this. One of the things that happens when you vote for that district attorney. That's an elective office. You're going to get to decide who decides whether to push for an indictment or not. So when people say, what does my vote make a difference? Well, it makes a big difference. And right there, whether it's the district attorney, whether it's your attorney general in the state, makes all the difference in the world because they come with different perspectives. And so it's really important for the public to understand that.
Voter suppression is very strong here, as well as in Georgia, where they were denying people the right to vote in some counties in Georgia. You know, so I don't know if that's happening in New York, but in the South, it's happening on a frequent basis.
No, I have worked in Florida, Philadelphia. I've worked in different parts of the country on election day fighting voter suppression, so I understand exactly what you're talking about, and obviously that new Stacey Abrams documentary documents what happened in 2018 in Georgia. So voter suppression runs across the line. It runs from purging voters who shouldn't be purged off of rolls because their names are close to other names, which is obviously insane, but it's a tactic that is used. It's making for registration issues for people on election day, which I fight all the time because there's some administrative error by the polling place and they're going to try to deny someone the right to vote. So I send people back in there and arm them with knowledge. And it goes to things like whether it's a voter ID law or it's not having drop boxes for these ballots right now, or it's closing down polls in minority neighborhoods. I mean, there's a lot of ways that voter suppression works. Some are in your face, some are not so in your face, but they're all insidious.
Is this something that's pulling up steam close to the election?
Oh my goodness, this is voter suppression on steroids. There are literally a few hundred cases in the courts right now because voter suppression is something that you might not think of. How about whether or not your mail-in ballot should be counted as long as it's postmarked by election day as opposed to arrived by an election day, because we have some post office problems. That's being fought in certain states in the court. It's being fought in the courts whether you get prepaid postage, because you don't want to penalize poor people that don't want to pay for the postage. And how about these signature matching laws where they reject your ballot because they say, well, the signature doesn't seem to match the registration signature, and that's just human beings saying that. Well, there's cases right now, because it's only about 20 states now, that will tell you if your ballot got rejected, and you can fix it and say, no, that is my signature. So, yeah, this is going on as we speak, and new cases are coming out every day, Pennsylvania and North Carolina, everywhere throughout the country.
Will we have a fair election?
Okay. I want to assure your audience, I'm going to say unequivocally, that I have complete faith in our election system. I have faith that it will work. It's going to be a tough road between now and election day to make that happen, but it will happen. And what I'm telling your audience is, you go out, you have a plan, you vote early if you're in a state, you can do that. You go to a nonpartisan site called vote.org, because it has all the deadlines for you, and you make your plan, and you make it early, early, early. Those are my three rules. And if on election day there's not a lawyer like me standing outside a poll trying to help you out if there's some kind of problem, then there's another nonpartisan organization called the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. I'm going to give out their number, because you call them from the outside that polling place on the time you vote in election day, 866-OUR-VOTE, O-U-R-V-O-T-E. You can call them, you can speak to a lawyer, and you can be advised your rights.
Before I let you go, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, what's your thoughts on her passing?
You know, it's very sad. Most sad, and it gets lost, of course, unfortunately, because of our news cycle, is that this is someone's mother and someone's grandmother, and that's very sad that she passed. As a jurist, I would say she leaves us two legacies. I'd say the first is that her soul was as kind as her mind was keen. And the other legacy was, there's no greater fighter in our time for equal rights under the rule of law. And she's going to be sorely missed, because she's not just a brilliant jurist, but she had empathy for real human beings, and that's something they don't teach you in law school.
Dwayne Bryant has been an advocate of police reform and the author of STOP, Improving Police and Community Relations. He talks about leadership and where we go from here.
Leadership is a principle, regardless of person or position. It doesn't matter. Leadership is a principle. So what do we do, was your question. I'm going to tell you what we do. Every police department today need to get New Conversation. The New Conversation is a 17-part online series that I've created to teach community, to educate police, to educate college and universities, to educate activists, as to what's going on and what has happened with policing in the black community for the last 400 years. So I start with history, and then I talk about what has happened. Then I talk about solutions. I talk about reform. I talk about unfair sentencing and how systems, government, criminal justice, has literally targeted black folk